Let's ask Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith is going to be at the Improv tonight for one day only, two shows. First show is sold out. I believe there are some tickets for the late show available. And we welcome back to the show, Kevin Smith. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, folks. How are you?
Good. Great to have you back on the show. We were just going over Rolling Stone. They release lists every once in a while, and they're never right. But they released a list of the top 30 sports movies. What, as a filmmaker, is your favorite sports movie?
Slapshot.
You know, came in at number 7.
Yeah, Slapshot's in there. It made the top 10 at least.
I'd put Slapshot at number 1. I would put Bull Durham at number 2.
Bull Durham came in number 6.
Oh, so I'm in the top 10.
Yeah.
Let me see. What else? What other sports movies? Miracle, probably in the top 20.
Miracle is high, though, and that movie's fantastic.
It was very low. Yeah, they had a 28 out of the top 30.
That's what I would imagine. Well, hockey's not a favorite sport of most folks. It's
right
way down the list. The Slapshot's been around for so long that even if you don't like hockey, that's a movie that kind of works its way up the list. But Miracle, for that speech alone.
Oh, yeah.
A locker room speech alone should be in the top 10, but that's my opinion. I got to know what number 1 is.
Number 1 was Hoop Dreams, if you remember from 94, the documentary about kids trying to make it to the NBA.
Nonsense.
Now, that's a wonderful documentary. It came out the same year as Clerks, so I was on the festival circuit with those guys, and that doc is great, but I would never put that in the top 10. If we're talking about sports movies,
yeah.
I thought we meant like fictionalized movies, but even if we included docs, I don't know that I would have included that in the top 10.
Thank
great
you.
Flick, but, you know.
Yeah, because Rocky came in at number 2.
That's what I would have imagined was number 1, was Rocky. If I
right.
had to, somebody with a gun to my head, I would have been like, oh, it would be Rocky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like sports movies, more than people like Rocky. What else did you guys find objectionable on the list?
I don't like, I think, 3 through 10. I just, there were movies.
What are they?
Like, where'd Rudy? Rudy's, like, one of the best movies ever.
Yeah, Rudy was very low on the list. It was number 26. They had, When We Were Kings was in at number 8, which is a documentary.
Another documentary, yeah.
Right.
It's a great documentary, but, you know.
Right.
Did they put King's Ransom on that list anywhere?
No King's Ransom, and then had the nerve to put Caddyshack in there as a sports movie in the top 10.
Okay, I mean, technically it's golf, but I would never consider that a sports movie. Caddyshack being a golf movie is the way that Clerks is a movie about retail. Like, in that world, but it has nothing to do with it.
Let me ask you a question about Clerks, and I think I've asked you this before, but as time goes on, I got to know, what do the other guys do in Clerks that are not you and Jason? Do they just, like, what do they do in between waiting for Kevin Smith phone calls?
Brian works a lot. He's always in independent films, Brian O'Halloran. And Jeff Anderson, he owns a business, like a tile import business. So he doesn't need acting at all. It's just something that every once in a while I'm like, you want to do this? And he's like, okay. But it's not something he pursues on the regular. He's got, like, a real job where he does much better than I think he would do if he was a professional actor. He does quite well.
That is so funny to me. Are you surprised that Clark still has so many references in that movie? Like, I heard somebody the other day was, it wasn't even talking about the movie, but it was just dropping Berserker references. And I thought, man, there are so many things out of that movie that still, something that I'd be most proud of is that people still pull lines and use them in everyday life from that film.
It that does. That means a lot, because long before I did this, like, for a living, I loved movies. And me and my friends would converse with each other using specifically and solely Raising Arizona dialogue. huge fans of that movie. So, you know, we didn't have real conversation. We would just mimic the dialogue from the flick. And so years later when I made flicks and people would come over and spit dialogue out at me, you know, that made me feel like, oh, Lord, I've made it, because I used to do that with the Raising Arizona flick as well. So that feels nice. And I'll be honest with you, it's like 21 years since Clerks, and there's probably not a day that has gone by where I don't talk about it in some way or another. And I know some people find that irritating, like, dude, talk about anything else. The Clerks is 21 years ago, but people keep bringing it up. Like, I'm proud of the fact that that movie still works 21 years later. It's a black and white movie, everyone's wearing acid wash jeans. set in New Jersey. Like, it really was a relic of its time and should have just stayed there. But thankfully, I think because it's black and white, it has this kind of punk rock feel to it. You know, I mean, not to say that Schindler's List is a black and white film. But
not very punk rock. Yeah.
But this one does, and I think that helps its aging process because it always just kind of felt a little bit old or out of its time. I don't know, but for whatever reason, boy, I wish I could figure out what the exact list of ingredients was.
Yeah.
I've investigated every movie my whole life, but they love that one, man.
It was a turning point for me because I was a little fat kid in Staten Island, and anybody that went to see, like, art house films were just fags to me. Like, you'd be like, oh, why do you go do that? And I had to go to the Angelica movie theater for the first time to see Clerks because it was not being played anywhere else. And then when I went, I realized there are probably so many movies that play here that I would like.
Right.
And I started, and that's, I think, when you start getting into documentaries and start watching. I saw The Secret of Rowan Innes. Movies like that I never would have saw before. But
oh,
because,
my God.
Right?
That's a deep cut, dude. You're talking about a John Sayles movie that most people don't remember. But what a deep pull that. That's like a game show winning spot. Of Rowan Innes.
Clerks did that to me. Clerks sucked me into that world to realize that there was more than blockbuster movies that were being made, that I was missing out on good movies, and that they weren't movies for just rich people. And that, believe it or not, it was that funny black and white movie shot in Jersey.
So weird, man. I mean, stuff like that does it for me. You know, I'm in this job. I'm supposed to be always aiming for the top. You're supposed to be like, I want to win an Oscar one day. And that'd be nice, but it's like getting in shape. Like, I lost 85 pounds recently, but I didn't work out to do it. All I did was cut sugar out of my life. So I can accomplish things, but I'm a real low-goal kind of guy. So, like, in my family, we weren't taught to, like, aim high. Like, my father was like, see that mountain? Never climb it. Very dangerous. So he would be like, put the bar on the ground, step over the bar, and that is accomplished. You don't have to jump over the bar. So because of that, I've always kind of lived my life in this, that's good enough kind of way.
Yeah.
And that flick, man, like, was just good enough to kind of feed me for the rest of my life. Like, I'll be able to eat out on that movie, it feels like, now until the day I die, which is, thank God, the kid in the, you know, the 23-year-old kid who made the movie had enough to say to secure this adult future, you know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm completely irrelevant at this point. But thanks to Clerks, a movie that's 21 years old, people are like, hey, it's that guy.
Well,
you know, but then every once in a while, I just have to get up, thrown off a plane or something, and people are like, hey, it's that guy.
Yeah,
that was the best. I think also what that did was they gave guys like you the opportunity to make films like. They go, well, we'd never make that film. And then they go, well, wait a second, I bet Kevin can make that film. I was so excited about the fact that you might have been involved with a Superman remake before they made that Brandon Routh one, and you weren't. But that you when you know a movie's coming and it's done through the eyes of a comic book guy and a guy who's a fan, that got me real excited. Why didn't that ever come through?
That, because at that point, it was 1996. I had finished my draft of the Superman script. They were like, we're going after Tim Burton to direct. And I was like, oh, my God, that's awesome. Tim Burton, you know, redefined Batman. And granted, like, Superman is not Batman, but still. Like, at that time, Tim Burton was the only person that got the comic book movie. So
right.
Even though Batman wasn't technically close to, you know, the Batman we all know, it was a lot closer than the Batman 66 show. So I think at that point, let's say standards were lower. That's how I get into script a movie. And then they bring in Tim Burton, and Tim Burton goes, well, I'm going to bring in another guy. I don't like this script.
Mm.
And he completely rewrote it. I think it was Wesley Strick who followed me. But at that point, all my ideas kind of go out the window. And then that movie doesn't even get made. There's an amazing documentary that's out right now. If you get it online, it's called The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened. There's a filmmaker named John Schnepp who was always really interested in, like, why didn't this movie come together? And he went out and collected all the players. Like, I'm always out there telling that Superman story and stuff on DVDs or whenever I do Q&A. And so I haven't told it in years, but I told it a while ago and put it on a DVD so people can watch it. So I haven't told it in a couple of years.
Right.
But when I was telling that story, man, like it was a story I got to eat out on for many, many years. But that was in 1996, before your Iron Mans, your Avengers, before your, you know, Batman, Chris Nolan Batman. So, you know, I come from Mallrats at that point. And in Mallrats, we talk about, you know, Superman having sex, blowing Lois Lane, the kryptonite condom and all that
stuff. Right, right.
And because of that, at Warner Brothers, they were like, well, you seem to know something about Superman. Maybe you can write the script.
Wow.
And I remember being in the meeting, and I said to him, like, look, I'm a huge reader of comics in general. Mike Carlin is the editor of the Superman group over at DC. That guy's forgotten more about Superman than most people ever know. Why don't you get him to write it?
Yeah.
They were like, he's a comic book guy. Like, back then in the 90s, there was this bias against, like, people that came from the world of comic books, same as there was a bias toward TV people within movies.
Right.
Because I had made, like, barely two movies, Clerks and Mallrats. Because of that, they were like, well, you're qualified to write Superman because, A, you like Superman, and, B, you write movies. So that's how I got in the door. But it doesn't really work like that at this point. Like, now there are people... You don't have to be a comic book fan to make a great comic book movie. Bryan Singer is always the first one to tell you, like, no, I never read the X-Men. But he could take the story of the X-Men and tell it through his own personal prism.
I thought he did a great job. I thought he did a great job, and the one that he didn't do, it was clear that he wasn't attached to it.
Totally. And then the last one he did do, the Days of Future Past, Sentinels and stuff,
yep.
He was back, and you're like, look at the Sentinels, this is fantastic. And then the next one looks like it's going to be really badass. It's set in the 80s, man. Did you see Olivia Munn dressed like Psylocke?
Yeah.
Literally looks like they photographed or photocopied the comic book and just put a human face on it. Like, her costume looks exactly like the character in the 80s. And now that's what they're doing. Back in when they made the first X-Men, remember, he put them all in black leather?
Right.
They didn't really look like their characters. It was more Matrix influence.
Yep.
Now all the comic book movies, they all look like the characters we know and love. So I look forward to these new Supermans versus my old Superman. My old Superman was, like, is not very good. It's like a fan fiction script. And you know, when I look back at my entire career, that good enough philosophy, like, it is good enough to keep me employed, but it's not... Like, you know, I'm not winning hearts beyond people that like Kevin Smith movies. But the thing that I like that I was able to do is you watch that movie and it makes you want to go make a movie. Because you're like, this counts? Like, you know, I'm like, yeah. My friends laughing. But if this counts as a movie, holy crap, I want to try it too.
Yeah, that you're right. It does give you that level of anybody can do this kind of, but you know, but it's the same thing when people look at a Jackson Pollock, they're like, I could throw a plane at a canvas too.
But they can, and it doesn't mean, you know, you won't be Jackson Pollock, but, you know, it's not a bad thing to imitate until you can innovate. That's what we all do, as children all the way up to adults. You see something, you like something, some behavior, some activity, you find a way to get involved, and you start doing yourself. As kids, we watch TV and we draw what we see, or we read comics, draw what we see, very bad renditions of it. You just imitate until you can innovate, until you can step out and be like, okay, I'm going to do it just a little bit differently. I've done this, and I've done it like the way people I've admired have done it, but now I'm going to add my own spoke to the wheel. So there's nothing wrong with that. That's really the way people learn things and the way kind of art or anything grows. Like, now we got a generation of YouTubers who are, you know, never mind making the first movie or something. They can make like a 3-minute short that'll be seen by more people than have ever seen all my movies combined collectively. 16 million hits or something. Like, I, you know, it's sad what happened to him this weekend, but Josh Trank directed that Fantastic Four movie. Prior to that, he directed a movie called Chronicle. Prior to that, all he did was a web short. He had done a short on YouTube called Stabbing at Leia's Birthday Party, and it was a party video. It looked like one of those videos just set at a party,
right?
Like somebody walking around with a camera, and then all of a sudden, these two people get in a scrap, and the camera whips over to them, and one guy whips out a lightsaber all of a sudden. The other guy does too, and it's real shot on video, but the effects are cool, so you didn't expect it coming. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
3 minutes, man. That built a dude's career, you know? So now you can make your statement in little bursts, you know, on YouTube. You don't even have to pull together full resources to make a flick in order to make an impact, in order to start a career. So I feel I'm not responsible for that. I didn't build YouTube or anything. But seeing Clerk is a call to arms for some people.
I believe
like,
so.
Oh, man, this is possible?
Yeah, I remember when I was in college, there were guys that who couldn't afford video cameras, but Fisher-Price made a kids video camera.
Pixel vision camera.
Yeah.
Pixel vision camera.
And it shot on cassette tapes. Right. And there was horrible quality, but people were trying to make movies on it because that was the best equipment that they can get, and it still produced some sort of movie.
It was the original digital image. There's a camera that Fisher-Price put out back in the late 80s, early 90s called Pixel Vision Camera. And it was meant for children. It was like, give a four-year-old this little camera.
Right.
High-end, but it did capture digital imagery. And then it fell out of favor. It wasn't very popular. But filmmakers started picking those cameras up at toy stores and thrift shops and discounts and using it. Richard Linklater, if you ever see the guy who did Boyhood, if you ever see his first movie, well, not his very first movie, but the movie that most people think of as his first movie called Flacker, he used every medium he could. He's got 16mm, 38mm, 8mm, and he actually shot with a Pixel Vision camera.
No kidding.
So if you watch the movie, you could see that little relic of the 90s where, you know, now everybody could shoot. It's a beautiful time for kids to express themselves because they cell phone in their hand.
Right.
They can do anything. They can live broadcast on Periscope or Meerkat or something like that. So all the options are there. But back when we were kids, there weren't a lot. And so the idea of this dopey kids camera that took these, like, weird-looking images, you were instantly an art filmmaker.
That's right.
But now you could just go pick up your phone, like anybody sitting there listening. It's fun to watch stuff. It is so fun to be a consumer. I love that. It's way more fun to make this stuff. Think about when you were a kid, all you did was play. And then when you become an adult, generally speaking, the only play you get involved in anymore is sex or sometimes pickup games or sports or something like that. But think about playing the way you used to as a kid, make it pretend. That kind of stuff's important, man. Fantasy is important, and more than just like, I'm thinking of her with her top off. I'm talking about true fantasy where you plot your future, man, not just accept your present, but go, imagine if I did this, or whimsy about stuff. So while people sit there and listen to this, think about taking the next step, which is like just picking up that thing you got in your hand, that thing you text people on, and people bug you on, they call you all the time. That's a ticket to ride, my friend.
Yeah,
you turn that on yourself or the world, and you press record, and you start sharing your voice, because your voice is your only currency in this life. That's the only thing that can make you stand out versus other people. Physicality comes and goes. You could be fat, you could be thin, you could have a big schwanz or whatever the heck. All that stuff eventually goes away. Who you are, the prism through which you see the world, that will never change, and that is so unique. You want to talk about a snowflake? Is more unique than anything else on this planet. You are so unique from everybody else. Your perspective is incredibly strange, different, wonderful, and somebody needs to hear what you have to say. So turn your camera on your phone on yourself, man. Start expressing yourself. Or if you don't like, I don't like the way I look, I hate the way I look, go to podcasting, man, which is kind of like radio for free. You know, oh, my Lord, that to me, the last 8 years of my life, been the most fulfilling, because I always wanted to do what you do, more than film. Like, I always wanted to be on the radio. I love that. The idea of theater of the mind.
Right.
Get rid of the pretense of like, well, what does this look like? Or I don't know, like the way this cat looks. And all you're hearing is a voice. Think about over the course of your life, how many people's voices you ever heard on the radio, and you're like, oh, man, I totally have sex with that person. And then you see a picture of them, you're like, that's what that person looks like.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've been on the other end of that a lot of times.
Me too, dude. I got a body for radio, trust me.
Yeah.
I always do what you do, because you can hit so many people and enter their brains and do this thing that's like, you know, when you got a $100 million budget or a TV show, you got all this help and you got cameras and you're figuring out how to present the story with pictures and whatnot. It's very entertaining, but there's a lot of cooks at work. When you're a person on the radio, listen to you guys every day. It's one, two, maybe three of you. And you generate, what, 4 hours every day?
Every day.
That, to me, is the dream job, man. It's every morning you wake up, you're like, oh, what do I want to talk about? And people are always jumping on radio, but radio to me is the top medium.
No, there was one day where I woke up on my way to work and I went, I can literally do anything in the world that I want to and make this company pay for it. I can decide that I want to jump out of a plane tomorrow, and as long as I can figure out a way to angle it for it's for the radio show,
right,
somebody else will pay for it. It's endless.
Isn't that amazing?
It's great.
Now, you're breathing rarefied air because you're on the actual radio and they pay you for this luxury stuff, but if there are people out there who are like, well, nobody's ever going to pay me to talk on the radio, don't worry about it. Podcasting is the medium for you. It's free. costs absolutely nothing. You don't have to ask anyone's permission. You send it to iTunes. They just put the thing up. Boom, you're a broadcast.
Yeah.
So for me, for the guy who was like, man, I always want to do radio, and nobody would ever hire me and stuff because they're like, you're Silent Bob. We're going to put you on the radio. I would do podcasts like crazy, and I do about five a week now, man. And it's because I just want to be you. I would love, honestly, I would stop making all these horrible movies that people hate if they would just put me on the radio.
Listen, I would have let you come in here today and do the show if you really want. I would have stayed home.
You could have taken, dude, I have to go to Tampa to do the shows tonight.
Right.
Take off tomorrow morning. I'll roll up for you and just do the show.
You have no idea how great that would sound to me is if you came in here. And Kevin Smith is going to be doing the Mike Calta show tomorrow. Right. That's fine with me.
That'd be totally cool because my mom lives in Claremont, Florida. That's why I come down to Florida all the time.
Right.
So while I'm here, you know, I kind of set up gigs and that pays for the whole trip. So it's like a free trip to go see mom. And this time I brought the kid with me. She's going to the parks and stuff. So I kind of make the trip down here quite a bit. I'm going to Tampa because it's about an hour and a half from where I am.
Right.
But after the second show, I doubt I'm going to want to drive home. My mom's going to be with me, but it'll be late at night. So maybe I'll just sleep over, come in the next morning.
Let me tell you, I would love if Kevin Smith came in on Friday, Thursday morning, I would make it the Kevin Smith show, and I will co-host the show with you, and you can lead it to talk about whatever you want. You're a dream guest. Because you're a guy who could just go, ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Smith, and then you just talk.
Right, sure.
Yeah, so.
I know, that's true. Most radio folks like me because when they bring me on, they go get coffee or a sandwich or go to the bathroom, and nobody notices.
You're the modern day Inigata DeVita.
Yeah. I have so many things that I want to talk to you about, too. I have seen you live. In fact, I went to, last time you were in St. Petersburg, you did a thing where you guys taped the podcast here and showed the movie and all that. And I came home from vacation to go and do stage announcements there because I'm a long time fan. But there are a million things I want to ask you. For starters, another movie rumor that I don't want anybody else to do it but you was Fletch.
Yeah, there was going to be a Fletch a long time ago. I was working on it with Chuck, who had it, Universal at that point, because Brian Grazer had it at Imagine. And then they let it go at Warner Brothers. I mean, I was off the project by the time they let it go at Universal. Warner Brothers scooped it up, I thought, for Jason Sudeikis. I think I was going back 2-3 years.
Right.
But then I hadn't heard anything about it until fairly recently. Somebody said it was going up again for option. I think Revolution might have had it, and Revolution is having some financial troubles, the studio, so maybe they had it, maybe they're letting it go, but suddenly it popped up into the ethos again, like, oh, Fletch. I would have loved to have done it, and I had my heart set on doing it, but I only had my heart set on doing it with Jason Lee. I thought he would be the perfect young Chevy Chase, but I couldn't get any backing. When we had that at Miramax for years, because I convinced Harvey Weinstein to pick up the whole Fletch library, with the exception of the two books that included this other character called Flint.
Yeah.
So Miramax had the library, and I wrote the script. And then I put two projects in front of it. One was Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and the next one was Jersey Girl. And I know that frustrated one of the producers, the guy who represented the author, Gregory McDonald,
right,
who since passed away. He died a couple of years ago. I felt bad. It's one of the things that, like, I really regret in this dopey career of mine is I never got to make the movie that Greg wanted to see. He liked the original Fletch, but it takes a lot of liberties with his book and with the character. But I learned to write dialogue by reading Gregory McDonald's Fletch books. If you ever read them, they're not dense on descriptive passages.
Right.
It's just dialogue. It reads like a big script. And, you know, he was very sharp. His dialogue writing ability, Gregory McDonald's, was so damn sharp. That's why we like that Fletch film. You know, in addition to that, like Chevy Chase at his best.
Absolutely.
I felt like that movie could definitely, like, you know, I'm not one of these big remake guys. You know, I have an original idea. And before you go remake something, like, try to think of something new. But Fletch, that series of books, like, they only did the first movie kind of correctly. That's the only one that's closest to the book. Fletch Lives, they made up an entirely new story. And all those books, each one of them is a worthy movie in and of itself.
I agree. I've read the books.
Billy crafted a great character. Oh, so you've read them as well. Did you read the Flynn books as well?
I read the Flynn book. I think he was a great character, and to see them the two together. And I agree with you. The Fletch movie with Chevy Chase was one of the greatest. But that first book, Fletch 1, is there's such a great story there that you don't get to see in the movie.
It's you know, before it was fashionable, it's the 0 year story.
Yeah.
You know, before, like, everybody started going, like, let's tell young versions of it, like when Star Trek made the cast young and stuff.
Yeah.
And this is their first adventure. That's what Fletch One was. Fletch, W-O-N.
Right.
The idea of the jet. And then there was a sequel, Fletch Two, T-O-O. But Fletch One, after 6 or 7 books in the series, firmly establishing who Fletch was, Gregory MacDonald went back and told the story about how he first got the job on the paper.
Yep.
So when I read that book, I was always like, oh, my Lord, this is a movie. This is the origin movie. This is the movie where you get to learn how he became Fletch.
Yeah.
So that's when I pushed for years. And the script that I wrote, dude, this is how I wrote the script. I had the entire script inputted into my script writing program, just the entire book. And then I just went and removed passages. I didn't create much new for that because I was like, this is flawless.
You just touched up the book.
Yeah, basically. And I barely touched it up because his writing was so damn strong.
That's great.
So it's a long script. It's a good script, very true to the book. And then the guy who produced it is the guy who maintains the property now. He was Greg's literary agent. I believe he now has the property. He never really liked my script. He wanted to do his script. Him and his friend were writers. So they have written a draft that is the current Fletch draft. It's not as close to the book as the one I did, but it's a Fletch movie. And I just don't know where it is. They've had a hard time putting it together.
There is a comedian, a friend of ours, who's got a show on the Travel Channel, and his name is Bert Kreischer. I don't know if you've ever come across him.
Oh, I know Bert Kreischer. Yeah, I just ran into him on Opie and Anthony last week.
Oh, okay, good.
He's a friend of Jay Moore's, right?
Yeah.
The crab. What is it? Crab Fest or Crab Pot or Crab Fake podcast, I think.
No, Bert is the machine. He's the one that has a story about robbing a train in Russia. Anyway, Bert is a guy who I always thought could be that kind of character. I don't know if he's necessarily a Fletch, but he is definitely somebody that I see with you that would you'd make a great movie with him. We're talking to Kevin Smith. You got it. I'm telling you, I have never in my life seen a human being that is funnier than Bert. Not just doing stand-up, just in life in general.
And to make himself
laugh. Doesn't care if you think he's funny. He's the guy who goes in the bathroom and pulls his pants all the way down to his ankles when he uses the urinal, and if nobody else is around. He's that guy. Yeah. Kevin Smith is going to be at the Improv tonight, 2 shows. First one sold out. He added a second show. It's killing me because I know I'm going to end up going to the show, even though I have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Don't go to the show because I'll come in the next morning, Thursday morning, and we'll just do a version of the show on the radio.
See, I have these whole many questions that I want to ask you. These things I want to talk about now. If I feel like I want to save it for tomorrow, if you're really going to come in.
I'm totally going to do it, dude. I'll stay over at night rather than driving home. That'll be the easy reason to stay over. And what time you get out? Like, you guys start at 6 o'clock?
We start at 6, but you can come at 7. You can come whenever you want.
I'll come at early. I'm a Wagon Baker, so I'll get up there and come. You know, as soon as I wake up, I'll just roll up.
All right.
Perfect.
Then tomorrow we talk about... tomorrow I'm going to leave a cliffhanger. You will tell me about Affleck as Batman and Daredevil.
Yeah.
And then we will talk about more superhero stuff. We're nerding out tomorrow.
We're going to talk. We got hours, dude. We're going to talk about so many things. We're going to fall in love by the end of the day.
you realize that this is a big deal now because to meet you is one thing, but to have you come in here and do the show, this is the same little fat kid from Staten Island who went to the Angelica Movie Theater for the first time to see Clerks.
Right.
And now Silent Bob's coming in here to co-host the show tomorrow. We're going to have a fun time.
You're gonna make me cry, man. Don't you want to go back in time and tell that little boy one day you're going to be sitting in a room with that jackass?
Yeah. Yeah.
Funnier than him.
Uh-huh.
This is a chance. You know what's really weird? You mentioned the Angelica. Angelica, is, of course, that was like, for those that don't know, is an art house multiplex in New York City, one of the first. Like, now it's fairly common, like the Alamo Draft Houses exist across the country, and you have these brew and view places where you can drink and eat a movie and watch, like, an art house film. But the idea of putting a bunch of art house movies together in one building, a multiplex for just for indie films, that belongs to the Angelica. They were the ones that broke ground on that first. And in that way, it's like a film temple.
Yeah.
Like indie film, so many things happened there. That was a crossroads of so much late 80s, early 90s indie film activity. So the place is still there to this day, and every once in a while I roll up there and buy a ticket. You got to go downstairs on an escalator to the screen, because that's where my life began. Not the life that I live, but my professional life all begins with the Angelica. Last night, the Angelica Theater tweeted me, and they were like, hey, how about doing a 20th anniversary screening of Clerks, where it all began? And man, that is like, you might as well say, hey man, how about you rip off all your clothes and I'll fillet you. Like, that is the perfect tweet to read. Like, you know, never mind sending me beaver shots or something. Send me a tweet that's like, we want to celebrate your work 20 years on at the very theater that birthed that work. That's why I saw Slacker. And as I left Slacker, I was like, this is what I want to do for a living. I want to be a filmmaker. So that theater was ground zero for me for, like, everything that my life would become. And for them to be like, hey, why don't you roll up and have a screening? That's the way you were talking about, like, the little kid from Staten Island.
Yep.
That's how I felt when I saw that tweet. I was like, we did it, dude. The Angelica tweeted us, for heaven's sake. They know
good
my
for
name.
You.
Kind of stuff.
That's so funny. I wonder when you've achieved that sort of success, when you have millions of dollars in the bank, what makes you happy? And I get that, man. When you get a tweet like that, and you know, there's a magazine, a newspaper here called The Creative Loafing, which is kind of like a Village Voice. Okay, so when I was a kid and I first moved to Florida, Creative Loafing was the thing where it tell you what bands were and all that.
Right.
But it was real.
Like their Village Voice, kind of.
Right. And I had no place in that world. I had no place in that liberal world. And I didn't know anything about anything. And I used to vote because they do a Best of the Bay Awards. And I'd vote for Ron and Ron as my favorite radio show and whatever was here at the time. And now to have gone on to win that award, like for our band won Worst Band Name. That's like I'm most proud of that, I think.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's when you become part of that thing that as an outsider you looked at and you're like, that's me.
Yep.
This is speaking my language. Don't they know that I'm part of them? Now they know that you're part of them.
This is my new co-host, Kevin Smith, that you're listening to. He's going to be in the studio with us tomorrow morning. I'm telling you right now, you and I would get along very well. And after tomorrow, you might be like, yeah, I'm going to need to do a show with this guy from now on and be a part of the
program. But I'll give you fair warning. You and I are going to get along so well. What you don't realize is it's all about Eve. I'm just trying to take your job.
You know what? I don't care. I'll go get that goddamn pixel camera and I'll make a movie and we'll see. We'll see who wins that fight. Kevin Smith.
You can take my job.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a great idea for a documentary. You guys switch lives.
That's fine.
Oh, my Lord. I'll do that in a heartbeat.
All right.
But
so
the problem is, the documentary's over. You're going to be like, all right, back to real life. I'm like, no!
Yeah. Let me tell you, you could easily do a radio show from wherever you wanted to. I've heard the podcast. I've watched the TV show. You can easily do a radio show from wherever you want. That would be interesting.
I've been out there in the world saying that for like 2-3 years and still no gig. So I don't know. I think most people are like, yeah, in theory, he'd be good, but in practice, nah.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow.
Totally. I'm going to use that as my audition reel. Be like, look, now I can play. I don't have to be blue. I don't have to talk about Clerks. Let me see if I could go a whole day without talking about Clerks.
Yeah, in fact, we won't even be like a special guest, Kevin Smith. We're going to be like, we're doing a radio show.
Right.
And Kevin Smith is co-hosting.
Yeah.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
So when people tune in, maybe there's some cats that haven't listened in like a month or something. And they're like, holy cow, when did this happen?
Who got fired?
Yeah.
All right, go see Kevin Smith.
People are like, holy cow, tough. But they're going to assume that Tusk hurt my career far more than it did if they hear me on the radio. He shouldn't have made that Walrus movie.
Kevin Smith will be here tomorrow, but see him tonight at the Improv. The Late Show is the only show that has tickets available. 960, that's not the number, 813-864-4000 is the number, or improvtampa.com, and you could get reservations for the second show. Dude, it's great to have you on the air, and I'm really looking forward to tomorrow. What I'm going to do is put you on hold so we can figure out how to coordinate this thing real quick, okay?
Totally.
All right, hold on. There you go, Kevin Smith.
Steve and Julie Weintraub here for the Golden Diamond Source. If you're thinking about getting engaged, Golden Diamond Source is your one-stop destination.
Shop, compare, and save at the Golden Diamond Source.
3800 Ulmerton Road.
Or online at goldendiamondsource.com.